Hello, my name is William Cueto, and welcome to Builders of Hope, a show about young Catholic professionals who are living out their faith in all aspects of their lives, their family lives, their social lives, and their careers. Growing in the spiritual life is not just for priests and nuns. It's for all of us, as you will see through the lives of our guests who are striving to live out their faith and build a better world. Dr. Cho Lam is a 31-year-old pediatrician. We will be speaking to Dr. Lam about her very important years in medical school, where she first began to realize that her faith was to have a major impact on her professional life. Dr. Lam has been instrumental in organizing international conferences regarding the practice of medicine consistent with the teachings of the church.
Now, you mentioned that you went to St. Thomas.
Yes.
In Texas. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about your university experience and how that got you to do what you do today as a doctor.
Well, that was actually one of the best times of my life. It was the first time I actually lived away from home, which is really nice, even though it was in Houston still. But it was also the first time where I really learned more about my faith, especially the reasons why. Because, you know, you receive the faith from your parents. And in some ways, you know, I just kind of accepted it, went out, you know, did everything that I was supposed to do. I had some understanding, but not the reasons why, especially with things like abortion. I mean, I didn't know the true reason. I knew it was wrong, but I didn't know why. And as I learned more and received my education from St. Thomas, a lot of my friends were very pro-life. And actually, one of my friends was president of the pro-life group there. I've learned from my friends and from my professors more about the faith, and I grew to love it more, to appreciate how wonderful it is, actually. Of course, you know, I did all the studies I was supposed to do, and went out, and went to parties and things like that, so that was a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. But really, my friends were the ones who are still my friends today, and they're the best people I've ever met, I think.
So you still kept and maintained the relationships mm-hmm. from university?
Oh, yeah. Well, some of them. Not. You know, sure. I wish I could do more, keep in touch with them more, but yeah.
And then how about your pre-med education and your medical education? Medical school's tough.
Yeah, yeah, it is pretty tough. Actually, I didn't decide to do medicine until my sophomore year in college. Mm-hmm. And at the time, I was just growing my faith. And I wanted to choose something that I could live, you know, a good life, basically. And I remember reading in the Gospels about, you know, in Matthew where Christ said, whatever, you know, when I was hungry, he gave me to eat. When I was sick, he took care of me. So I thought, okay, let's find something that I could do, that I can actually practice this. Mm-hmm. That'll make my life easier. But I could do it every day.
You can do it every day. It's part
right.
of your work.
Exactly. You know, efficiency is always a good thing. So then I kind of screened everything and see what I liked. And really, the only two things I could come up with was becoming a nun or being a physician. So I guess I took the easier way out and I decided to be a physician.
And that's also a true vocational call.
Yes, in some ways it is.
So that was a decision that you made, that this was what God intended for you.
Absolutely. In some ways it is very much a vocation, in that I am able to live what Christ calls us living, taking care of the sick, also working in a poor neighborhood if I ever get the chance to. I mean, that's what I wanted to do. And of course, the thing is, the thing I was thinking back then as a sophomore, that, well, I can do all this, and hey, they pay you for it, so it makes it nice. And so that's how I decided to become a physician. And then I was accepted to University of Texas in Houston. I have a friend who was there a year ahead of me already, so that helped a lot. Mm-hmm. So I had some Catholic friends there already. And I actually ran into several other residents who were in training who were also Catholics. And we actually had formed a group called the Medical Ethics Forum. We got together about once a month or so to discuss different topics in medical ethics, like abortion, contraception, in vitro fertilization, patient-physician relationship, things like that. And we would ask speakers to come in, and then we have a discussion period at the time. So it was helpful. And
what was the purpose of it?
The reason we started was because in our medical schools, we had a medical ethics class, but it was kind of watered down. It didn't really help us much in really forming our conscience, basically.
Right.
And so my friend, who is a resident at the time, is also a member of Opus Dei, so he actually organized most everything, invited the speakers, and the purpose was for us students and residents, and also some researchers too, research scientists in the area, UT Baylor area, to come together to discuss these issues and what we could do, you know, as what we ought to do as Catholics, and also how to support each other. Because, you know, a lot of times you feel like you're by yourself a lot, but if you see someone else, your own colleague, who feels the same way, who believes the same way, I mean, it makes a whole world of difference. So that's the main purpose of it.
And who came in to speak these different issues?
Well, we had, sometimes we had other physicians who are older and who have been practicing their faith and who are like models for us. Mm-hmm. We had priests as well. And also, we had invited speakers like Janet Smith. She's a professor at University of Dallas. And she actually came to talk about contraception one time. That was really cool to see her there. So just different speakers.
And what would they say, like, for instance, on the issue of abortion? How would they present that to you within the, you know, the medical field, and at the same time, they're offending your conscience? It's just a small example of how they would present it.
Yeah. A lot of times, if it was a physician, they would give their own personal experiences. Like a story. And that's, I think, some ways that's the best method of teaching. And some of them present it that way. We actually had a whole day that was dedicated to Humana Vitae. And we had an OB-GYN doctor, Dr. Buchalski from Virginia, to come talk to us.
For a second, just so you can explain to the audience, what is Humana Vitae?
Oh, Humana Vitae?
Yes.
It's an encyclical that Pope Paul VI had written for us as laity, well, for the whole church, actually. Explaining and clarifying the value and dignity of human life, basically. And specifically, he spoke of the value and the sanctity of marriage, and also he addressed the main issue of the time, which was contraception.
Mm-hmm.
And he basically outlined the moral evil of contraception and why it is wrong, not just saying it's wrong, period,
right.
But he explained it, and he explained it in such a way that it brought out the sanctity of marriage, the goodness of it, and also in that respect, the goodness of life as well.
They call that one of the prophetic documents
of
the church, because it also predicted the coming age.
Exactly.
It was very, very much a foundational document in the area that it was addressing.
Yes, it was. And you know, I found that in the medical community, Humana Vitae is a dividing line for us.
Mm-hmm.
Most physicians, I think, would be against abortion. But when it comes to contraception, that's a harder thing. Contraception now has become a norm. I mean, basically, they write prescriptions for contraceptives for women and teenagers as if it was like candy or so. Just everybody gets a script. To truly practice it, to truly practice the Catholic faith, you have to say, no, I can't, in good conscience, I cannot write this prescription for you. So that makes it really tough, because then you lose patients, or people get mad at you, or your own colleagues think, what do you think you're doing? That's crazy. And the thing that I've learned through my years of training, that I just can't tell my patients, no, I can't write this for you. I have to give them the reasons why.
Mm-hmm.
And so that takes a lot more time. And I think that's what physicians are learning in general. They want to practice faith. They really have to take the time out to talk to the patients. This is the reason why I think contraception is wrong. And also that it's something not good for you as a patient, you know, as my patient as well. So presenting it is a difficulty at times, but that's what we learn.
So these monthly seminars help to form you.
Yes,
as a young doctor, not even a young doctor yet,
One
hoping to become a doctor,
right,
and took you on to your residency in medical school and to your residency in Detroit. Tell us a little bit about your residency in Detroit.
Oh, it was 4 years. I did a combined program of internal medicine and pediatrics. So I worked with kids as well as adults. And I wanted to work in a big city area, so to get as much experience as possible. And I wanted to be close to, you know, the kids and in areas of poverty as well. So I really enjoyed my time in Detroit. It was tough. It was rough. But it was exciting, too. I mean, I learned a lot, granted. I've met a lot of really good people. You may think, you know, the kids have it rough. It's a tough place to grow up. And yet, they have such, you know, they try their best. They really do. And the little ones, they're just cute. They love life, you know. And whatever you give them, they just love.
And why did you choose pediatric medicine?
Oh, because I like the kids more. That's basically it. I think they're a lot cuter, too, than adults. But I just enjoy being with them more. And I find that it helps because I'm kind of their size anyway. So being with the teenagers, being with the kids, they like me because, heck, they can look at me eye to eye if there's someone big coming at them.
And you're a young doctor.
Yeah, yeah. And that helps a lot, too. And with the teenagers, it helps because I look kind of like them, sort of.
So you take the opportunity, too, you were mentioning to me earlier, to speak to them about life in general or other issues, depending on what it is they're coming to you for.
Yeah. That's very true. I do like talking with the teenage girl. That's probably the group that I enjoy most. And a lot of times, if I get to see them by themselves with their parents, we talk about different things, you know, about going out, about how they're doing health-wise, of course. But then I'd ask them about dating and things like that. In general, some of them will have questions, about what should I do in this situation with a boy, things like that. But I always try and encourage them to wait until they get married, basically. And that appeals to them across the board.
Really?
They do want to find someone eventually who will love them. So I always try and remind them, don't let anybody use you. Wait until you get married for that one special person. And it'll be worth the wait. And that's basically what I tell them. I mean, I'm sure they've heard everything about the contraception already, about abstinence.
How do they respond to that message?
Again, I'm pretty sure they've heard it before. I'm not like the first person who tell them this, but they do listen. I don't know what they do with it afterwards, but I always hope and pray that that at least that's one more person who mentioned it to them, so that maybe they'll think, oh, maybe it is a good thing. Here's someone else who has mentioned it.
And what's your sense? Is your sense seeing so many teenagers and young people that they are looking for that kind of guidance? Because they're probably not hearing that much of it in the world, and for all you may be the first one to tell them. Maybe unfortunate, but it may be true that you could be the first one and only one.
Yeah, it's true. That's very true, and I've considered that a lot. Actually, I did a month of adolescent medicine in Detroit, and there's one girl I remember coming in, several infections, and she's just basically at the clinic a lot. And finally, I saw her, and I looked through her record. I thought, my gosh, she has so many infections. She might get AIDS or something. But I told her, has anyone ever told you that maybe abstinence is a good thing for you? And she said, no. I'm like, nobody's ever told you that? So I said, here's one person who's going to tell you that it's a good thing for you. So you don't have to be sick all the time. You don't have to come into the clinic. You can choose better who you want to be with rather than just anybody. So every once in a while, you get somebody who's never heard it before, because that's the way society is. I mean, they really push you sometimes. But, being one more person who mentions the same thing, something that's good to counteract all the other things they hear, really helps, I think.
And what about the way they respond to life, or their understanding of it, or appreciation of it?
For teenagers?
Yes.
Teenagers, I mean, I get the sense that they really look forward to it. I mean, it's growing up, trying new things, doing new things, being out in the world to do what the grown-ups do. Mm-hmm. I think teenagers in general want that independence, but they're also scared because their life is so busy, and sometimes their parents' lives are pretty busy too. So who can they find to help them in their time of need? So if they don't have good friends, if the parents aren't around too much, then invariably they'll fall into the peer group and do whatever the rest of the peer group does. It's a tough time. I mean, it's a tough time to grow up in general. So they really do want someone just to spend time with them. Not necessarily always lecture to them, but just to spend time with them.
And you mentioned that they don't understand a lot. You gave an example earlier of a 13-year-old.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, sometimes it's really hard. I was actually a student at the time, but I was doing a rotation through psychiatry. And there was this 13-year-old girl there. She was there for depression. So I was taking my time, since I was a student, didn't have much responsibility. I talked to them, everyone, each child, each kid. And I asked her, well, why are you here? And she said, well, I'm depressed. She goes, why are you depressed? I goes, because I'm pregnant. And she's only 13. She didn't look it to me. She was much bigger than I was, even. And I thought, oh, my gosh, 13-year-old girl is pregnant. I didn't know how, but it must be so hard for her. All of a sudden, she has to grow up. And then she says, well, my mom wants me to have an abortion, but my grandmother doesn't. So I'm like, oh my gosh, this is like death situation here. So I asked her, well, what do you want to do? And she goes, I don't know. I mean, she has no clue. She's 13. So all these thoughts run through my head. What can I tell a 13-year-old girl about life? You know, to convince her that this is life and don't kill the life. But before I got a chance to say a single word, she had to leave for an ultrasound. So the whole afternoon I was praying and trying to figure out, well, what can I tell her? So finally she comes back, and the first thing she did was she showed me this ultrasound, a picture of the ultrasound of her baby. I can't remember how far along she was, but she was so happy because you could see the head, you know, the nose, things like that. And she goes, look, there's my baby. And then I said, whoa, it sure looks like it. I asked her, well, what are you going to do? And she goes, I'm not going to kill my baby. I mean, I didn't even have to say a single word. She understood. She knew just from a picture, but from her upbringing, I'm sure, that this was life and she didn't want to kill it. So that taught me that even if you're a 13-year-old, it doesn't mean you can't understand. And that was, I learned more from her, I think, than she actually learned from me, because I didn't have to say anything.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Kids are great. That's why I love them so much. They have so much in them, and they can do so much more than we think they can.
Now, in your profession, and just about any doctor, they're dealing with life and death issues, you know, day in and day out.
Well, okay.
You can.
Yeah.
And all sorts of sicknesses, complications, good times, bad times that people are going through. Mm-hmm. You know, having a health situation can only be a very trying time in a lot of situations.
Yeah.
So the doctor has a very important role when they are counseling individuals and when they're assisting them with health care.
Yeah.
What would you say is the role of the average doctor?
The role of the average doctor?
The role of any doctor.
Okay. Basically, it's to promote the health of the patient, but actually, probably more than that, to look out for your patient. That's probably the most important thing. For me, it's a child. And that's, in some ways, it's easier because it's so easy to look out for the best thing for a child. And to make sure that they're well cared for. And so that's why my work is not just with the child, but also with the parents. You know, I see some first-time parents, so they're not sure what to do about how to feed the child. You know, should the child be sleeping through the night? What should I do about my house? You know, should I baby-proof it? What should I do? Things like that. I mean, it's just the whole environment of the child in general. Their family, and with teenagers, I ask them about their schools, how's school going, how are their grades, things like that. So basically, the care of the overall patient is very important in the medical profession. And then every once in a while, you get a chance to say something that may make a difference, and it can come very unexpectedly. One example, I remember, I did a month with adolescents, and one of the weeks I spent in an AIDS clinic. So these are adolescents with AIDS. And I remember being on call, I basically was up all night. The next day I had to go to clinic. I was so tired. The only thing I wanted to do was get out of there and go home, go to bed. That's it. So I had a 17-year-old come in who was recently diagnosed with AIDS. So I did the regular thing, you know, went through the medications, advised them this and that. So finally I did the blanket question, so do you have any questions? And so the question he asked me was, why do I have to suffer? And I'm thinking, this is not the time for me to be going into this. But I realized that things like that come at, one, at the moment when you least expect it, but two, they can come anytime, so it's good to be ready, you know, to form yourself well, and also to give a understanding ear. I mean, sure, I can't remember what I told him, but I just remember thinking, oh my gosh, this is one chance in a million to help someone who's dying,
sure,
or who is, you know, who's in a tough
time. Great. Now, how do you intend to use your profession going forward?
Going forward? Well, right now, I'm working with two wonderful pediatricians. They're both Catholic, Dr. Evers and Dabley. They've been in practice for 40 years, and they're good, solid Catholic physicians. And
it's important to you to be in that environment.
Oh, yes, definitely. It helps a lot to know that there are other physicians like me. And I'm learning a lot from them, actually. Not just medical things, but also how they deal with patients, because they've got a vast, you know, experience, much more than I do. But what I really want to do is to continue working with the children. to be a good Catholic physician, because it's just not enough just to be a good physician, I don't think, but to be a good Catholic one, because it makes a difference. To be able to tell, you know, people or tell parents about NFP if I can. It doesn't I don't get that opportunity very much.
Yeah.
But sometimes if they ask me, or I refer them in the right direction, or just to talk with the teenagers, telling them, wishing them luck in school, encouraging them in their schoolwork, in their studies. And then every once in a while when we get to talk about, you know, ethical issues or, you know, sexual issues, that helps. Sometimes I mention it here and there.
So representing what the church calls the gospel of life,
yeah.
Representing, you know, the way of life, you know, versus mm-hmm. what they call the opposing
right.
way,
yeah.
the culture of death.
Yeah.
I wanted to read something mm-hmm. that the Pope addressed to doctors internationally this mm-hmm. year in the year of the Jubilee. He writes, "Dear Catholic doctors, you know so well that it is your indispensable mission to defend, promote, and love the life of every human being from its beginning until its natural end. Today, unfortunately, we live in a society dominated both by an abortion culture and a basic culture of death going along that road." So, you know, there's this distinction that you had mentioned earlier in probably every profession, where you can use your profession to go one way, representing one way of life, or another, depending on your position and your ability to influence. And doctors have a very unique position with a lot of ability to help, to do good, or sometimes to do bad.
Right. No, that's very true. And although sometimes the day-to-day grind can be pretty difficult at times, but really, as physicians, I believe we're called to defend life at the moment of conception, at the end of life. And physicians have a role. I mean, you have the OB-GYN doctors right at the beginning, right when the baby's born. You have the pediatricians, internal medicine doctors, all the specialists. And now we have geriatrics, which are specialists in the area of people who are older, basically. And so we have doctors covering the whole gamut, the whole
mm-hmm.
span of life. So they could play a big role in encouraging a person, not just to take their medicines just to help them get better, but to live a good life, you know, to act in such a way that they feel as if their life is being respected, not just, oh, here's another patient,
sure.
got 5 minutes, and that's got to run. But really, just to let them know that even when they're sick, we're there for them, that we're trying to helping them to feel better, and even if we can't cure them, which is a lot of times, we can't cure a lot of illnesses, that we can help them deal with the pain, deal with the sickness, and help their parents, or their family rather, to help them with it. I think no matter what profession we're in, I think it's always good to have people around to help you out. And I found that with family, and also with a good spiritual director, that they can help you kind of guide your way through life, good friends as well. And as far as being in the medical profession, it is tough sometimes, but it's possible to live a good Catholic life and integrate in such a way that it's just not something I do at work and I can forget about it and go home or go to church and do other things. But you can put the two together and live a good life, and hopefully according to God's will.
We'd like to thank you for joining us on Builders of Hope. If you'd like to contact today's guest or myself, email us at our website at buildersofhope.com. We invite you to join us next week when our guest will be Brian Fimian. He will discuss the challenges he faces in running a company in today's corporate world. Brian will also speak to us about our capitalistic system and the roles and responsibilities companies have within the system.